Audible.com.
I'm Anne Marie Awad, and this is Rue Radio. On this week's show, we take a look at the changing neighborhood of Gardere. What was once a place known for high crime is now undergoing a renewal. We check in with members of the community. Modernizing Louisiana's sales tax code is a big job, and a commission formed to do just that has begun tackling it this week. Wallace Watkins checks in on the first meeting and tracks some of the ideas already being put forward. Louisiana faces a shortage of primary care physicians. Wallace Watkins takes a deeper look into the reasons why and at what the state is trying to do about it. On Insight, Sue recaps a tenuous year for Louisiana higher education with LSU System President and Chancellor F. King Alexander. And do you have what it takes to beat back weedy vines in your garden? Dan Gill discusses what you'll need in your arsenal to keep them under control. But first, the news.
If you could ask the candidates for governor one question, what would it be? Here's your chance. Politics and Pino. Whose vote is it anyway? Friday, August 28th from 6:30 to 9 at the old governor's mansion, 89.3 WRKF is hosting a forum for the gubernatorial candidates. You will provide all the questions, we'll provide the tasty beverages, appetizers, conversation, and tours of the facility. Tickets are available at WRKF.org.
Welcome back to Rue Radio. I'm Anne Marie Awad. Gardere, a neighborhood synonymous with poverty, blight, and crime, is changing for the better. Overall crime has declined in the last 4 years, and a group of residents are working to make the area safer, smarter, and friendlier. I visited the area for a closer look. Muriel Harrison, founder of the Gardere Initiative, rounds her big church van onto Gardere Lane with two back seats full of kids. The kids are bouncing as she pulls into the parking lot for Hartley Vay Gardere Park, where a shiny new playground practically sparkles in the afternoon sun. It was paid for with a grant received by Breck from Dr. Pepper Snapple and a national nonprofit called Kaboom. The catch was that volunteers had to build the playground in a day, a challenge which the Gardere Initiative took on.
This street is Ned, so on this street you have four plexus.
Harrison drives me around, showing me block after block of nearly identical fourplexes and duplexes. Many are virtually unchanged since they were built in the 70s and 80s as student housing, though they have deteriorated with more than a few boarded up doors and windows. The community saw a big change, a spike in crime in the aftermath of Katrina.
Like I said, after that, the Hispanic community moved in, and they used to call them like walking ATMs, because many of them were undocumented and they would carry cash, so they were just targets.
Because they were undocumented, they wouldn't seek help from law enforcement. According to American Community Survey data from 2013, that's the last year available, a little over 10% of Gardere residents are undocumented. That number is nearly double what it was in 2000. Pastor Eleazar Rodriguez of Iglesia Al Aposento Alto is also part of the Gardere Initiative. He says his congregation is a little over 200 people strong, most of which are undocumented.
In my congregation, I have from Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua. I have a family from Belize, from Puerto Rico, and from Mexico. From all the Central America, we have some people.
Rodriguez says that when he first came to Gardere to lead the church 8 years ago, members of the undocumented community were reported to federal immigration authorities far more often than they are now. And he says even when they are, the authorities still treat them fairly, allowing them to post bond and return to their families.
Immigration is pretty fair. I mean, they're nice people. They're nice people. And policemen, they're nice people. You know, it's like when you go to the Walmart. Maybe you will find 1 gallon of milk spoiled, but that doesn't mean that all the gallons are going to be.
Even if Rodriguez says undocumented members of the community have less reason to worry, they themselves may not always feel that way. Captain Andrew Stevens of the East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Department oversees the Gardere area, and he says a more recent challenge is convincing undocumented people that it's okay to call 911 when they need help.
We try to hold meetings with them using Crime Stoppers, trying to let them know that it is okay. We're not here to deal with, you know, you being undocumented here. We're here to just let you know that if you're a victim of any type of crime, that you know, we're going to extend the same thing that we do to anybody else. I mean, you have those rights while you're here.
Captain Stevens also works with the Gardeer Initiative. He says the Hispanic community is playing a bigger role in community events. However, Pastor Rodriguez says many keep to themselves.
They're afraid. You know, they're afraid. They go through a lot.
The initiative is helping, though. In the years since establishing their office on Ned Street, their services have expanded to include bagged lunches for neighborhood kids, a library, tutoring and GED programs. They also provide internet access to people who need to apply for jobs. The list goes on and on, but essentially, they've grown to fill many needs the community has long had.
I look at it as a community-based organization, and that's what we just want to improve the lives of the people who live in the community.
Harrison rounds the big church van back onto Gardeer Lane, where I can see people walking in the street. Many people in this community don't have cars, but after several years of requests, the neighborhood is set to finally get sidewalks on the busy thoroughfare within 2 years. I'll give you one guess as to who helped make that happen. For WRKF News, I'm Anne Marie Awad. Louisiana's higher education leaders have been on edge all year. This year's legislative session could have inflicted steep cuts on the state's colleges and universities. And while it seems like they made it out of the woods all right, higher ed leaders are bracing themselves for next year's budget, which is shrouded in uncertainty. Sue Lincoln sat down to speak with LSU System President F. King Alexander for insight.
I'm Sue Lincoln. This is Insight, and my guest today is LSU System President F. King Alexander.
First, I owe you an apology. Even though I was educated at LSU, I did not major in math. I said you were starting your second year in my promos. It is your third year here at LSU. How encouraged are you by the developments you have seen in your time here?
Well, I think particularly as it applies to our student population, we moved in probably our largest class. Our numbers will come in a couple weeks, our largest class of students ever, which means that the LSU brand, the LSU name, the quality of an LSU degree is certainly growing, but more importantly, just to see where students were coming from. When we moved them in, I like to ask them where they're from, and we had students from Rockville, Maryland, all the way to Sacramento. And not only Lake Charles and Grand Isle and Shreveport and Monroe, but Chicago, lots from Texas, many from Atlanta. The LSU name is strong.
The cachet of LSU is obviously why you applied for the position here. You know, they say that the first year of marriage is the hardest. I found the second year was hardest, and you've just finished a second year that was pretty brutal. Did you talk at all, or have you talked since you've been here with any of your predecessors? Have you spoken with any of them and said, why didn't you tell me?
No, the challenges that we're facing are not that unique. I want to go back to California. I mean, we were giving out IOUs to state employees in California. We furloughed people, had to furlough people in California. We were turning away 50,000 students a year because of budget cuts. 50,000. First of all, it's not that unusual, but yes, I've spoken with Sean O'Keefe numerous times, both in Washington and in Baton Rouge, and Mark Emmert. I've talked with Mike Martin, I've known for a very long time, so I see Mike and interact with Mike on many fronts. So there has been some turbulence, quite a bit of turbulence, and coming in, I'd say probably the biggest challenge was that our infrastructure was basically gone. We had to hire a whole new set of deans. A whole new set of vice presidents, and take the chancellor president role and push it together to make people realize that we were really not a broad system that has 23 institutions and 500,000 students, as the Cal State system did. We were really one primary flagship institution with some regional arms.
What are you most hopeful for, or do you bleed purple and gold enough that you intend to finish out here your entire career in academia?
I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe that. There are two goals that I have. One is at the federal level, I will continue to fight, as I did from Kentucky to California to Louisiana, to make sure that the next 50 years in higher education, which is the Higher Education Act, that we focus on saving public higher education and to make LSU the great national entity and institution that I know it can be. We can do so many things. There are only 17 universities that can claim being land grant, sea grant, and space grant institutions. I think the strength of LSU will ultimately be measured by the strength of the entire state. And that is our goal as a university, is to help our state improve in every capacity, economic capacity, eliminating disparities, agriculture, feeding the population, to educational attainment, health. If we're not improving these areas for the state of Louisiana, we are not the flagship land-grant university that we should be.
Perfect. That was great.
You're listening to 89.3 HD WRKF in Baton Rouge, celebrating 35 years in the Baton Rouge community. Discover with us.
You're listening to Rue Radio. I'm Anne Maria Wadd. Coming up at the Manship Theatre next week, Everyman by the National Theatre London. The screen adaptation of one of England's oldest plays stars Chiwetel Ejiofor, best known for his role in 12 Years a Slave. Also at the Manship next week is Testament of Youth. A British woman recalls coming of age during World War II, and it's starring Kit Harington. Yes, that's Jon Snow. Tickets and showtimes for both of these films can be found at manshiptheatre.org. There is a nationwide shortage of primary care physicians. The Federal Health Resources and Services Administration projects that by 2020, it will be even worse as an aging population only increases the demand for primary care doctors. Wallace Watkins took a look at the shortage here in Louisiana and at a possible solution.
This is Louisiana's Lab. I'm Wallace Watkins. Jack Hua is a third-year medical student at Tulane.
It's such an enormous feat to get into medical school. We've been working hard for a really long time, and it's just that the specialties make so much more money. I mean, obviously, you know, someone making $150,000 a year is going to be well off. It's just when you make $150,000 compared to $450,000.
His feelings are nothing unusual. The attractive pay of specialties is one factor contributing to a shortage of primary care physicians in Louisiana.
Under the federal guidelines, it's general practice, family practice, pediatrics, OB, and internal medicine.
Jonathan Chapman is the executive director of Louisiana Primary Care Association.
We're working with various residency programs and medical schools, trying to get them exposed more to primary care.
Another issue, medical schools tend to be located in more urban areas. Of the three medical schools in Louisiana, one is in Shreveport and two are in New Orleans. Research suggests that residents practice only 50 to 60 miles away from where they completed their program. In order to draw some of those physicians toward the rural areas, the state offers a loan repayment program.
If a physician comes out and agrees to serve in one of these shortage areas, then they help repay those loans.
According to the federal government, an area is adequately staffed with health professionals when there is one physician for every 2,000 residents. Once that ratio reaches 3,000 to 1, the area is considered a health professional shortage area.
Probably 90 to 95% of our state is considered in a shortage area or an underserved area.
For Louisiana's Lab, I'm Wallace Watkins.
Support for healthcare and science coverage on Louisiana's Lab comes from Bazile, Saxe & Wilson, serving the legal and business needs of people and companies throughout Louisiana, and from ExxonMobil Baton Rouge, supporting education in science, technology, engineering, and math.
Hear more Louisiana's Lab stories on health, science, and innovation at WRKF.org. You can also follow us on Twitter or Facebook to get all of our top stories in your feed. When it comes to your garden, weeds are the enemy, but some weeds are tougher than others. And when you notice pesky vines creeping through your little patch of earth, Dan Gill says it takes hard work and serious commitment to beat them back.
Welcome to Bayou Garden on 89.3 WRKF. I'm Dan Gill with the LSU Ag Center. Controlling weedy vines requires determination and persistent effort over time. My vine control advice is generally about 60% pep talk and about 40% technique and herbicides to use, because you really have to determine that you're going to take the handle of the problem and control the situation. Now, vines are so difficult to control for a variety of reasons. You know, they don't have to put any effort into growing strong, upright stems the way most plants do. They rely on other plants like shrubs and trees for support, or structures like fences and houses, or they simply run on the ground. Since they don't have to put any effort into growing strong stems, they put those resources into rapid growth. And that means vines can quickly create major problems in the landscape. And if you make control efforts against them, they can rapidly recover from those efforts if you aren't persistent and do the follow-up work. It's important to work hard. Sometimes people will go out there and clean all the vines out of an area and think they've done a great job, and they're basically done with it. Well, those vines will grow right back in a heartbeat. And if you sit back and let those vines regrow and take back everything you worked so hard to take away from them, well, you're just going to end up spinning your wheels in the long term. Now, there are two basic areas that we focus on when it comes to controlling these weedy vines in our landscapes. First is physical control. Now, physical control is basically what it sounds like. This is getting out there and ripping out the weeds by hand, cutting them back. They may have tubers or fleshy roots, so it's important not just to cut the vines back, but to try to dig the root system out as much as you possibly can. It's usually easier to dig the roots out when the soil's kind of moist, so a few days after a good rain is a good time to get out there and grub out those vines. You can also simply cut the vines back and simply keep cutting them back, and that will help control the situation as well. Physical control takes a lot of work. If the vines have covered the side of a house, for instance, well, you might want to physically pull all those vines off from the side of the house to begin with, and then move on to other types of techniques, including the use of herbicides after that. Now, when it comes to using herbicides, the systemic herbicides are our best option. And these are herbicides that you apply to the foliage of the vine. The foliage absorbs the herbicide and then sends it throughout its body, through its stems, and even down into the root system. Glyphosate is commonly used for this purpose, and you'll find it in brand names like Roundup, Kills-All, Weed and Grass Killer, and other brands. Triclopyr is another good herbicide to use, and it's especially useful on the more woody types of vines. And you can look for products like Brush Killer, Brush Be Gone, or Poison Ivy Killer. Now, these herbicides are not selective, and they'll damage or kill any plant that you get them on their foliage, so be careful. You need to plan on making repeated applications, and again, only apply this to the foliage of the vines. Where you can, shield or cover nearby desirable plants. Cover them with plastic, for instance, to make sure none of the spray gets on them. You can also cut a vine back that's growing up the side of a tree. The stump is going to resprout, so right after you cut that vine off, paint that freshly cut stump with some of the triclopyr, and that'll do a good job of killing that stump off and making sure it doesn't resprout and start to grow. If it does resprout and start to grow, just come back and spray that new growth. Again, be persistent and be long-term in your efforts. Remember, it's your yard. Nothing can grow in it unless you let it. This is Bayou Garden. I'm Dan Gill. Join us next week at this time for more on your garden. Podcasts of the show are available at wrkf.org.
You're listening to Rue Radio. I'm Anne Maria Wadd. How much have you thought about sales tax outside of maybe looking at your receipt after you leave the store? Louisiana's sales tax system is complicated and, more importantly, outdated. A commission devoted to rethinking the sales tax system has had its first meeting this week. Wallace Watkins explains the task ahead of them and takes a look at some of the ideas already being put forward.
This is Capital Access. I'm Wallace Watkins. It was the first of many meetings on Tuesday for the Sales Tax Streamlining and Modernization Committee, led by Representative Julie Stokes.
This revenue base accounts for a large portion of how we support the services of our state. So we need to understand what our options are in terms of modernizing how we do sales tax in Louisiana.
Right now, the state taxes the sale of goods. And while those goods used to make up a large share of the market, they don't anymore,
Instead, people are buying more and more services. Scott Drinkard of the DC-based Tax Foundation says a modern system taxes those services.
If you're going to do tax reform, if you're broadening the tax base, you're bringing new transactions into the taxable arena, you can then bring the rate down overall.
Louisiana's statewide sales tax is 4%. When combined with average local sales tax rates, it reaches nearly 9%, the third highest in the nation. It's not about taxing more transactions, says Drinkard, but the right ones.
Sales taxes are consumption taxes. You only want to apply them at that final point of consumption.
Not to the purchases a business has to make in order to create a product. Committee member Danny Garrett.
The farmer who owns the cow buys a pencil and a piece of paper so he can keep track of how many cows he has and how much milk they produce. Under your model, your proper tax plan, would that purchase not be taxable?
Correct.
The committee will meet 5 more times before the end of the year, with the goal of welcoming the state's next governor with recommendations for a new and improved sales tax system. For Capital Access, I'm Wallace Watkins.
Support for Capital Access comes from Southern Strategy Group, governmental relations, strategic planning, and public relations in Baton Rouge, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, supporting Louisiana agriculture through education.
This is Rue Radio. I'm Anne Maria Wadd. Don't forget about our event next week, Politics and Pinot, Whose Vote Is It Anyways? Remember, this is your chance to ask gubernatorial candidates your questions. Capital Access reporter Sue Lincoln will be hosting at the Old Governor's Mansion. That's Friday, August 28th at 6:30. For more information, go to WRKF.org. On next week's Rue Radio, we observe the 10-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Sue Lincoln speaks with former Governor Kathleen Blanco. Nick Jansen speaks with the state climatologist Barry Kime about the conditions that created Hurricane Katrina. We also take a look at how the small beachfront town of Bay St. Louis in Mississippi has bounced back over the last decade. Coming up on Out to Lunch, Stephanie Regal talks branding with Carrie Guglielmo, co-founder of AST Marketing Group, and Mary Ellen Slater, founder of Reputation Capital. That's all for this week's show. Our theme music was composed and arranged by John Tully. This has been your food for thought. Until next week.